ॐ भद्रं कर्णे विष्णुयामते वाः भद्रं पश्येमाक्षभिर्यजत्राः शिरैरङ्गैस्तुष्टुवागुंसस्तनूभिः व्यशेम देवहितन्यदायुः स्वस्ति न इन्द्रो वृद्धश्रवाः स्वस्ति नः पूषा विश्ववेदाः स्वस्ति नस्तारक्षो अरिष्टनेमिः स्वस्ति नो बृहस्पतिर्ससाति। ॐ शान्ति शान्ति शान्तिः। Let's start from Swapne to Jivaha. What number is that?
152, page
1. Page 152 on the big book. Do you see it there, Chris?
Yeah,
Swapne to Jivaha, what page is it?
77.
77 is it? On your little book. 77?
Mm-hmm. What line?
The first verse on that page.
And what verse?
Oh,
mine says
12?
12, mine says 15. What did you say in the big book?
13.
Okay.
So
all the, that's the problem.
Swapne Sajivaha?
Yes, Swapne Sajivaha. Swapne Sajiva Sukaduka Pokta. Swapne Sajiva Sukaduka Pokta. Samayaya Kalpita Vishwaloke. Samayaya Kalpita Vishwaloke. Sushupti kale sakale viline, Sushupti kale sakale viline, Tamobhibhuta sukarupameti, Tamobhibhuta sukarupameti. Swapne cha jivaha sukha dukha bhokta, Swa mayaya kalpita vishwaloke, vishwa loke. Sushupti kale sakale viline tamaha abhibhutaha sukarupam eti.
You know, just look at the different words. Instead of sa, it says cha. I mean, instead of cha, it says sa. And instead of, it says jivaloke.
Right. I know. Did I say cha? I don't see any cha there.
No, you said, I think you said cha.
I think the only difference was jivaloke instead of vishwaloke.
Okay.
You said vishwaloke and it says jivaloke.
Same.
If I said sure, I shouldn't have. I don't know where I found that in there. Swapne Sajivaha. Okay, let me just bring us a little reminder. Two verses ago, my verse 13, we're introducing the Omkara, the meaning of Om. And it's being introduced in order for the sake of meditation, for the sake of meditation, which is Nididhyasana. Nididhyasana means, as opposed to Upasana, I'm using the Omkara, the symbol Om, as what we call Abhidhana. Abhidhana means it's a name. It's a name for Parameshwar. It's a name for the Lord. So Om is a name for the Lord, but it's different than just a name. Swamiji uses this example. Like, say somebody has the name John. You know, anybody could be, any man could be called John, right? And so the word John doesn't really say anything. It doesn't really give you any knowledge about the person. It's just an Abhidhana. It's a name, right? The Omkara is a name for Brahman, but it's also what we call a Vachaka. Vachaka means it reveals the vacha. It's a word that reveals the object of the word, right? So, for instance, the word lamp is a vachaka. It's different than a name, right? Lamp is not really a name. It's a vachaka. It's something that reveals the object. I say, if like this, if I say to you, I say the word lamp, what happens in your mind, you can't really do anything about it. Some generic form, some form of lamp occurs. If I say flower, some form of flower occurs. And so that's very, very powerful. It means the word itself produces the manifestation of knowledge. Right? So there's a manifestation of knowledge between the vachika and the vachya. So now, that's different than, say, if I had had a name for a rose. Say if I named Rose something like Rosie. It doesn't bring anything up, right? But a vachika brings something up. So when we're doing nididhyasana, the omkara, even though it isn't as what we call abhidhana, it is a name for Brahman. It's Brahman's name. It's Parameshwara's name. It's the Lord's name. But the symbol itself, the om, the a-u-m, also has a meaning. So when the meaning is understood, as you understand the meaning, the word itself contains the understanding of Parameshwara, of Ishwara. So when you say the word, once you understand the meaning, right, it takes you immediately to the recognition of yourself. Of yourself as Parameshwara, not just Brahman, right, but of the whole. It carries with it the recognition of the whole. And so what has happened here, in a few verses back, in the Kaivalya Upanishad, the Rishi is introducing this meditation on Om. And then following that introduction, he now goes on to explain it in a particular way. And what he does is explain it in terms of the waking dream and deep sleep. Right? And he started out talking about our predicament as a jiva, as an individual in the world. And he says, starting out, after having introduced this meditation, he says, it's the jiva, you know, the Atman, the self, totally deluded by Maya. Maya parimohitatma. It's really the antikarma, right? So the jiva. Totally deluded by Maya. What I mean totally deluded is that you have never had an experience of being outside the box. Even the life of the jiva is beginningless, right? The individual lifetime after lifetime after lifetime from beginningless time. And everything about you, your body, your mind, your sense organs, absolutely everything that you are is contained within the whole story, the whole of the creation. That your body, mind, sense organs, everything that allows you to relate with the creation is made of the creation and contained within the creation. So even though your being, the conscious being that you are, is both the self of the creation and free of the creation, you know, your being by nature is absolutely free of the creation and is the very being of the entire creation, there is no way for this body, mind, sense organs to know that without a means of knowledge. Like, and all of your means of knowledge are only to give you knowledge of what is happening within the box of the creation, either on a physical level or on a subtle level. Even in subtle worlds, it doesn't matter, you're still within time and space. And so that's why they say putti, putti mohita. Putti means all the way around. Circling all the way around you, there's no space there for jnanam to take place. And what is the knowledge? I mean, just imagine this knowledge is to recognize that myself is both free, is both the self of the creation and free of the creation. That I'm the truth of the creation and I'm free of the creation. That I am the whole. Now, how can my eyes or my inferences and, you know, presumptions and all of this come up with a knowledge like that? It's not possible. So you need an actual teaching methodology to take you to the core of your being. Once you come to the core of your being and recognize that through these teaching methodologies, then you can see. And so the teaching methodology he's decided to use for unfolding this omkara is the waking dream and deep sleep. And the reason for that is when we break the om up into its component parts, a, u, m, the akara, the letter a, stands for the physical creation, Virat. That's the whole physical creation. And the Vishwa, the Jiva within the physical body and this physical creation. That's the U stands for the whole subtle world, Hiranyagarbha, and the Tejasa, your dream world, the world that you where you can use your imagination, you know, the imaginal world. And on the Sameshti level, on the total level, that's what we call Hiranyagarbha. And then on the unmanifest level, the individual is called Prajna, and then we call the unmanifest Ishwara, because Brahman with the Maya is what we call Ishwara. And so when the creation hasn't, in its not in manifest condition, who is there? Ishwara. Right? Hiranyagarbha, the subtle, total subtle hasn't come. The physical manifestation hasn't come. You know? And what is it for the jiva? The deep sleep that we call prajna. Because when you're in deep sleep, everything about you is an unmanifest condition. Right? Your mind, your body, your mind is an unmanifest condition. It's not known. Okay? And so we say for the individual, that's what we call prajna. You're just in a deep state of ignorance. It's the body, mind, sense organs are not manifest for you to experience from your standpoint. They're not manifest for you to experience. And so here he says, the self, this jiva, you know, totally deluded by maya, having identified with the body, the sharira, subtle body, physical body, it's that one that does everything. That's where the karta kartatvam is. I'm a doer, I'm an enjoyer, you know, I'm an actor. So that's the karta kartatvam is dependent upon that delusion, right? The only time you don't experience the karta kartatvam, the doership, is in deep sleep, right? But then even when you wake up from deep sleep, then you say, wow, I slept so well last night. I had such a deep sleep last night. So you bring the kartatvam back, you know, but in the deep sleep state, kartatvam means doership. You bring that doership back, but in the deep sleep, it's actually not there. Right? And so, which is interesting in itself, just to recognize that in fact, within the box of the creation, you do have the experience of being unmanifest. You do experience yourself as unmanifest in terms of there's no subject-object differentiation, there's no knower known, right? There's no experience of duality. You're not a knower at that time. It's very profound to even think about it. In deep sleep, you're not a knower. You're not knowing anything. You're not a doer. You know, these things are gone. They depend upon the mind to have that type of thing. Why that's important? It's because who you are, your essential nature, who you are, you can't get rid of. You can't be without it. If you can be without an experience, whatever the experience is, if you can be without it, it's not intrinsic to you because you can be without it. And so there's this logic that we use called anbhaya-vyatireka, right? The anbhaya-vyatireka says, when this is, that is. When this is not, that is not. That's the perfect anbhaya-vyatireka. So I would have to say like this, when knowership is, I am. When knowership is not, I am not. And that's where it breaks down. We use this anbhaya-vyatireka, we want it to break down. Otherwise, what if I say like this? When the body, and think like this, when the body, when the physical body is being experienced, right, I am. When the physical body is not being experienced, I am not. No, I still am. Physical body is experienced. Let's say like this, the waking state is experienced, the waker is experienced, I am. The waker is replaced by the dreamer, and so waker is not experienced now, the dreamer is experienced, I still am. Waker's gone. I still am. Deep sleep is experienced. I still am. And so there's what's called, right? It's an amazing thing. If you understand it's not just logic. It's something to understand here that your being, the conscious being that you are, the conscious existence, the sat-chit, the conscious being that you are, is something which pervades and is present to, pervades and is free of, really. It pervades and is free of all experience. Right? In all states of experience, it pervades all states of experience and it is free of all states of experience. Otherwise, you couldn't be the self of the waker, the self of the dreamer, and the self of the deep sleeper. Because the waker is negated by the dreamer. And the deep sleeper negates both. So day after day, we go through this cycle of waking, dream, and deep sleep. And since it's so intrinsic to us, that's why it becomes what we call a very powerful prakriya teaching methodology. It's called this Avastatraya Sakshi. Right? Prakriya. It's the method of teaching where the sakshi, yourself as the witness, is differentiated from the waking, dream, and deep sleep state. And it, you can understand it intellectually, but you need to understand it also experientially, because it's the fact. It's the fact that you even acknowledge as an ajnani that I, the waker, am the dreamer and the deep sleeper. There's no sense of any, there is no type of self-annihilation as I go through these three states of experience. And even, there isn't the slightest concern or weirdness in my going from a physical body to a subtle body to no body. Nothing, it's fine. And the reason it is fine is because there is no transition whatsoever for me. Because I'm both the self of the waker, dreamer, and deep sleep, and I transcend the waker, dreamer, and deep sleep. That's why, you know, we use the example of when you wake up from a dream, nothing happens to you. You die in your dream, nothing happens to you. Right? It's astounding, especially once you know this, you've done the viveka, then you can actually, you know, recognize this on so many different levels. And so here, what they've done is start with the jagrat, the waking state, just saying that on the one who is awake, in the waking state, that person, this jiva, enjoys, you know, food and drink and different pleasures. That's how they gain their satisfaction, become a kartan, both doer and enjoyer in this world, gaining your satisfactions in that way. And then he goes on to say, and in the dream state, that same jiva becomes the bhokta, the enjoyer of sukha and dukkha, of pleasure and pain. Like, there's not real much carpet for him in the dream state, but so you just become a bhokta, an enjoyer of pleasure and pain, living in this world, which has been the world, this world, Vishwa, this jivaloka, this world of the jiva, created by the jiva, which is imagined and projected by your own maya. Swamayaya, right? Kalpita means projected. This dream state is projected by your own maya. You know, you are, and Swamiji will talk about this also. You are a little Ishwara in reference to your dream, in reference to your imagination. You have that capacity of maya to actually project a little world for yourself, and then live in it and have a whole story that takes place. That's an incredible phenomenon. In the Mandukya Upanishad will say, in the when they do the Gaudapada Karikana, you know, that the dream, he uses the dream a lot, and he uses it because it's the Achilles heel. Swamiji, it's the Achilles heel for Dvaita. You know, if you understand the phenomena of the dream, you know, phenomena of the dream, you can understand the maya and satya mitya. Because really, just as you here can say, how can you say this isn't real? I perceive it, I touch it, I taste it. You know, I experience it as real. Well, the dream character can say exactly the same thing. And it's like two likes, the level of the reality, the order of reality that the two likes enjoy, you know, make it real for each other. Right? Like this is one level of reality. And so we're all made of the same stuff. And so it's very real. I can pinch myself and say, well, if I pinch myself, it hurts. If I lift this, it's heavy, you know? But I can say the same thing in the dream. If I pinch myself, it hurts. How could you say this chair isn't real? Right? It's exactly the same. Swamiji will say, the only difference is that the dream is, you know, the creation is a longer joke. You know, it's a longer joke. For the individual, the dream, it takes place within the creation. It doesn't last as long. But from the standpoint of the Atma, from the standpoint of the self, there isn't any difference in the sense, in the relationship of the self to the projection. Whether it's the self to the whole samashti, the whole total projection, which is we call Ishvara, or that same self to the understanding the relationship of that same self to your dream projection. What's the difference? There's no difference. And then you say you go from the waking state to the waking state has more, it has objective reality. It has shared reality. Everybody know what I mean by that? Like we're all sharing this reality. And then I'll say, but my dream is only subjective reality, so you know it's not as real as this. It's not as real as this, but this isn't real. If this isn't, you know, if this isn't real, then the dream is not as real as this, which also isn't real. And so in what way is it not as real? Well, the dream lasts, the waking state lasts longer. You know, this, the creation, Ishvara's creation lasts longer. These bodies are a shared reality. We're all within Ishvara's manifestation. It includes all of the jivas. All of us are within it, you know. And then when I, being within Ishvara's creation, I have the capacity to have a dream, but the dream is subjective to me. You're not all experiencing the dream. But that's just like a dream character saying, you know, this shared reality of all of us, say this is a dream now, this is a shared reality, right, that we're all enjoying. That's different than my subjective reality, right? Dream character can say exactly the same thing, you know? The question is, what is the relationship to your of you to that, you know? Is it satyam mithya? Is the relationship satyam mithya? Mithya's mithya. Right, that means that, you know, whether I have a dream pot, say an imagination of a pot, like a clay pot, I have an imagination of a clay pot, or I have a real clay pot, right? In the end, in the analysis, there's not going to be nothing but chaitanya there. There'll be nothing but consciousness there. Whether it be from a subtle projection of my mind, a subjective projection, or it be a physical reality. In the end, there's only going to be consciousness. You know? If in the end there isn't consciousness, then there's no advaita. Then there's some sort of a material. So, but material other than consciousness. So if you think there's a material other than consciousness, show it. Find it. In fact, you can't find any material at all. Every material, everything that you call a material is really just a name. It's a nama. It's a name for something that breaks down into smaller names, into smaller names, into smaller names. So in the end, you have to get to what is actually the substance there. And you can do it on the subtle level. It's a very good teaching tool to do it on the subtle level. Because on the subtle level means on the standpoint, from the standpoint of your mind, you are the whole. From the standpoint of your mind, if, what I mean by that is that if I ask you to imagine a meadow, there's the conscious being that you are and the meadow. Say we delineate it like that, the conscious being and the imagination. That's what's there. Conscious being and your imagination. In reference to that, the conscious being and the imagination, you are the whole. The imagination comes from you, is sustained by you, resolves into you. The imagination has no being apart from you. You are its very self, and you are free of it. It totally depends on you for its being, and you are totally free of it. It can come, it can go. All kinds of things can happen in that imagination. Nothing happens to you. It can be a wonderfully beautiful imagination, a very subtle and blissful and happy imagination, or be a really creepy one. A creepy imagination. Yeah. It has creepy feelings in it. Yeah. But in neither one does cause any damage to you. That's the maya, that's the mithya. And so this differentiation we have to make on every level, on the level of the jiva, the individual experience, and on the level of the smishti, Ishwara's experience. When we're trying to understand Ishwara, we are within the box. And we in the box, because this is, the jiva is part of Ishwara. And we're looking at this creation out through our sense organs. And so we have to, by analyzing this creation that we perceive through our sense organs, we have to be able to arrive at its mithyatva. We have to be able to arrive at its apparent nature. And so how do you arrive at the apparent nature, or the mithya, the maya, the mithya of this creation? It's basically by analyzing the creation in terms of space, in terms of vastu. Vastu means objectification, what's objectified here. In terms of space, and in terms of time. Everything in the creation is bound by change. So all of these are little prakriyas, the tiny prakriyas that we have, teaching methodologies, that we have to use in the analysis of the creation. Because as you analyze the creation, you recognize that there is nothing here but what we call names. You can say names and forms. But you can't find the thing, the substance. Part of the problem with it, why you can't find the substance, is because your sense organs are only capable of perceiving name and form, right? They can't perceive the substance. And when you think of it like this, say just in this room, the sense organs are, the sense organs are perceiving all of the names and forms that are available for perception, okay? And now, even for me, if I'm one of the names and forms, right? I'm one of the names, so are you. I'm one of the names and forms. Now, I'm perceiving what? Through my sense organs. Name and form. I can perceive this physical body, for instance. And my mind can objectify my sense organs. And then I can perceive the thoughts in my mind, right? And so my means of knowledge allow me to perceive all of the different names and forms that make up me as a jiva, and then of course make up you, right? But I can't perceive the substance of these names and forms. I can only be that. See what I mean? It's like the eyes perceive form. But who am I as the Atma? I'm the substance of the eye. I'm the self of the eye. Right? And so the eye can't perceive me because I am itself. I'm the self of the body. I'm the self of the mind. I'm the very being. I'm the stuff of it. And so I'm what is actually there. And so there's no possibility of perceiving it. Who's going to perceive it? I can only be it. And what makes it so, obvious and profound at the same time is that I am a conscious being. Right? I'm not inert. You can never say that you're inert. Okay? There's no inertness illumining you. The bottom line of any type of vichara is satchit. I am a conscious being. In fact, anything that can be objectified or known is always differentiated from me, the conscious being. And the conscious being that I am itself can't be objectified. I can't say, oh, look at the conscious being, then who's looking? So I am the conscious being, and in fact, as I start objectifying, recognizing that in fact I objectify all of my experience, you know, the conscious being that you are starts becoming freed. It's a freedom of from recognition, not a freedom, not that you were ever bound. You never were bound. That's the bondage is simply a bondage of ignorance. You've never been bound at all. But there's a bondage of ignorance. When you start recognizing that the whole of your experience is both not away from you and objectified. The whole of your, everything you experience at all times, everything that you experience, it is both not away from you and you are free of it. Because those experiences go and change, they come and go. You don't. Even every thought in your mind comes and goes. You don't. Every perception comes and goes. You don't. All of the state, these states, waking, dream, deep sleep, they all come and go. You don't. And then you also have to recognize, well, they come and go, and whatever is negated, one state negating the other, the waking state negated by the dream state negated by the deep sleep, what is negated also is knowership. In the deep sleep state, you're not a knower. And look at the waking state, your physical body in the waking state, doesn't exist in your experience in the dream state. You take a different body, but there's still duality. So this physical body doesn't have anything to do with you. Because the anuvritti means that which goes through, remains as the constant, is free of that experience. It can be the self of that experience, like in the waking state, but it is also intrinsically free of that experience. So you have the dream state, totally different world, right? Totally different jiva, and then you've taken another body, totally different body. And then, but still knowership can be there. If you have a body within the dream, otherwise you're just as Ishwara. You're just a body in this Ishwara with a whole dream being known. And then deep sleep state. In deep sleep state, it's just me. Me, the conscious being. Conscious being is not conscious of anything. But it's complete, it's wholeness in itself. Your being doesn't have to be flitting about knowing things in order to be whole. You're the very knowledge, the very knownness, the very knowledge that pervades all of the Maya, all of the names and forms. And so when you say like this, consciousness, just pure consciousness, is like pure capital K knowledge or capital K knownness. You know? Like now, for instance, if I say this is known, this is known, this is known, all these things are known, they're all known, 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 known. That's pure Aviveka. It's pure Aviveka. Because if I were to get rid of the creation, what would be left is that completed state of me. And that me is known, not by an object, not as an object, but it's known because it is the very consciousness itself. And so I don't lose. I mean, it's not like the self without the mind and sense organs to be engaged in this knowership, you know, is being deprived. In fact, this subject-object knowership has no essence at all. It has no knownness. See, if we go knower known, okay? When we say the knower knows, then there's the knower here and then there's the known. So something's being accomplished, right? Because the knower knows the known. And without the knower, the known won't be won't be there. You need the knower for there to be the known. You understand? Like, how can I know? How could this be known without the knower? But the fact of it is that both the knower and the known within this duality are illumined by the consciousness, which is the experience of knownness. That's why if I get rid of the subject and the object, the knower and the known, what's left is the known. So knownness is superimposed on the object. That's why when you do meditation and resolve your sense organs in your mind just into your own being, right? There is no, from the standpoint of your own being, there is no subject-object knownness, knower knownness. There's just the self-evident shining of your being, which is known. Your being is known without duality. So your being, in fact, is the knownness, which allows this whole manifest creation to be called, you know, manifest knowledge. Or for you to say, everything across the board is known. It is known, it is known, it is known, it is known. You can't, your imagination, it is known. Your feelings, your emotions, they are known. In fact, there's two things there. Is and known. It is and it is known. It is known. It is and it is known. The is known, the such-it, is you. And there's nothing away from it ever at any time, and it never modifies at any time. So that's the viveka. That's the viveka they're trying to do here. So he says, in the dream state, you project your own maya, you project the world by your own maya, and then sushupti kale, at the time of deep sleep, this whole thing becomes unmanifest. Sakale viline. Sakale means the whole thing. This whole thing becomes, when the whole thing becomes unmanifest in the deep sleep, it's an absolute locus. Sushupti kale, sakale viline. When the entire creation becomes unmanifest, goes into dissolves at the time of the deep sleep, then overwhelmed tamaha abhibhutaha, that jiva totally overwhelmed by tamas, by ajnanam, right? Sukarupameti, he goes to that sukarupam, anandam. That's why, just saying in the deep sleep state, we say that that state is ananda. It's fullness. It's because the atma is not encumbered that at all. There's no dvaita there. There's no agitation. There's nothing going on to encumber or to as though dull the wholeness, the ananda of yourself. So I'm going to use the example. When you wake up from sleep, it's, I slept well last night. That's when I slept well. It's a pleasant experience. When the alarm, I had such a good sleep, it was so great. When the alarm went off, thank goodness I have a snooze alarm so I could just, you know, fall back into myself, sleep a few more minutes, because it's so good. You know? Advaita, I'm by myself. There's no knower, there's no enjoyer, there's no karta, there's no doer, there's no creation, there's no one babbling, there's nobody commenting on it at all. And I just love that. You know? People love it. You know, they you'd love to go to sleep. Even, you know, when I look at my cat Tibby sleeping, I love to watch her sleep. You know? She gets in these, you know, extraordinarily comfortable, stretched out, you know, poses, you know, with this little smile on her face, you know, soundlessly, just a little smile. Yeah. I mean, animals are wonderful like that. You really, you know, it's ananda, you know. And you know that ananda for yourself, you know. But think about how extraordinary that is, that ananda is there, especially when, you know, we're not having to deal with ourselves or the creation in any way. Means the jiva upadhi, right? This body, mind, sense, organs. We don't have to deal. We don't have to deal with anything. And so there's no competition. You know, there's no competition in terms of emotion and feeling and agitation with my own, just my own presence. For the jnani, you more and more recognize your own presence as the self of all of this and as free of all of this. You know, and so whatever nonsense is, just my Swamiji might say, whatever nonsense is going on out here or going on, you know, within your mind and whatnot, it doesn't compete with you. It remains as nitya. You know, but that's definitely not true. You know, until that differentiation is taking place, you don't recognize the stability of your being, and the mind is only focused upon the pain, you know, the sukha and dukkha. So he says, so now he said these three states of experience, and so now he goes to tie it together. He says, punasta janmantara karma yoga. Punasta janmantara karma yoga. Sa eva jiva svapiti prabuddha. Sa eva jiva svapiti prabuddha. Puratraye kridati yascha jivaha. Puratraye kridati yascha jivaha. Tatastu jatam sakalam vichitram. Tatastu jatam sakalam vichitram. Punahacha janma antara karma yogat saha eva jivaha svapiti prabuddha puratraye kridati yascha jivaha yaha cha jivaha tataha tu jatam sakalam chitram. He says, now this jiva, having just gone to sleep, right, he says, and then again that very jiva, that jiva who had slept, wakes up. Right? Why does the jiva wake up? He says, "Janmantara karma yogat," from the karmas of a previous birth, from another birth, janmantara. Because of the karmas of a previous birth, you wake up. what they mean there is that the prarabdha karma, you know, the prarabdha karma that has caused you to take this birth, right, will force you to get up. It forces you to wake up, right? Because there's karma to be fulfilled here. And so you can't just go to sleep and stay that way, you know. You can sleep and sleep and sleep and sleep and sleep and drag it out for as long as you can, but it's not going to be that long. At some point, you must get up. Your own psyche will force the issue. You know? So the prarabdha karma means your prior karmas that have caused you to take this birth, from the strength of those karmas, that jiva, who was awake, sleeps, goes to sleep, and the one who is asleep wakes up. Okay? So then he says, puratraye kridati yaha jivaha. He says, that jiva is the one who plays in the three cities. The three cities are the waking, dream, and deep sleep. So there's one jiva who plays in these three cities, and jatam sakalam vichitram, enjoying all of the manifest creation with all of its different variegation, this variegated creation, all of this is produced, right? Mm. By that jiva, which is in fact, we have to go on to finish this thing, which is in fact Brahman. So he says, adharamananda makanda bodham, adharamananda akanda bodham, yasmin layam yati puratvayamcha. Yasmin layam yati puratrayam cha. So just to finish this verse, it's divided into, it says, that jiva is who? That self is who? It is adharam. Adharam. Anandam. Akanda bodham. Yasmin Layam Yati Pratrayam Cha. The Atma is the Adhara. Adhara. The Adhara means that which is the truth or the basis of all, of everything. Swamiji uses this example for it. For an Adhara. If, he'll use the example of a shirt. A shirt is dependent for its substance on cloth. Okay. Cloth becomes the adhara for the shirt. But the cloth is dependent on the threads. The threads become the adhara for the cloth. Without the threads, there is no cloth. And so, like that, in Maya, it will go on and on and on and on, getting further and further, further down into what is actually the substance that is holding that. What is the stuff of it? What is the substance, the basis of it? We use, sometimes for Adhara, we use the basis. What is the basis of it? So like that, what is your basis? What is the basis of you? What is the basis, the one that you resolve into? You means this body, this mind, the sense organs, this world of experience. Into what does it resolve? In the end, what holds all of these experiences? What holds it is the adhara, right? What is there as the basis, you know, that is the substratum, the basis of all of these experiences? Where do they resolve? Where do you resolve? But so if you look, where does the waker resolve? Where does the dreamer resolve? Where does the deep sleeper resolve? What is the adhara for those? And so here they say, I am the adhara. Brahman is the adhara. That adhatam is akandam, is anandam. Anandam is anantam. Anandam means fullness. Fullness is, sometimes we say anandam as fullness, is anantam. Means the limitlessness of myself. So the fullness of myself, the limitlessness of myself, the unencumbered nature of myself, we call that ananda. But what is the ananda? Is the ananta, the limitlessness itself. And so that adhanam, which is anandam, which is akandabodham. Now, this is the knownness. Akandabodham. Bodham means knowledge. Akanda means undivided. Okay? Knowledge which is non-dual. Knowledge which is undivided. It's consciousness. Right? It's consciousness. It's the very knownness. So akanda is undivided knowledge, undifferentiated knowledge, which is ananda, which is limitless fullness, which is the very adhanam, which is the very adhanam of all experience. And so if in that, he says, yasmin layam yati puratrayam cha. It's that into which these three cities, Puratrayam, these three cities go. It's that into which these three cities resolve, you know, into that which is the Adharam, which is Anandam, which is Akandabodham. And now, in two more verses, he'll move into, and that Akandabodham you are. So this whole progression is going to move into the Mahavakya. Mm. But now, having got to the Adharam, Anandam, Akandabodham, then he'll go back out saying, and it's from this self that the whole creation comes. And that self, you are. So, but we'll do that when I come back. Okay. Just take a minute. Om Purnamada Purnamidam Purnat Purnamudachyate Purnasya Purnamadaya Purnameva Vasishyate. Om Shanti Shanti Shanti. Hari Om Shri Guru Jo Namaha. Hari Om.
What was that word again for knownness? Akanda?
Akanda means undivided. Bodham means knowledge. Means consciousness.
So is this an answer
to it? It is. It's all, yeah. Sometimes we use jnanam for consciousness, Buddha, Chaitanya. It's all different words for it.
At some point you said that you have to recognize the relationship of the self to the dream state and the waking state, which I think you were talking about.
Differentiate, yes.
Right. The changelessness of the self present to both the waking state and the dream state. But my mind is sort of latched on to this idea that it's, what about the need to know the relationship between the waking state and the dream state? In terms of experientially.
Yeah, experientially.
Right. And so there's wondering how to understand the difference, really, experientially. And I was thinking something about the subtle nature of the experience in the dream state. It seems like it's more mostly, it's the sense organs that are involved in experiencing, in perceiving a dream.
Actually, let me simplify it a little bit first. When they're using the different, what they're talking about by differentiating between the waking and the dream, is that the waking universe that you experience and the waking body are not the dream universe and the dream body that you experience. And so the one negates, in other words, when you're having a dream, that dream world and the dreamer and the dream world are different than the waker and the waking world. You know? Then you can go into talking about, well, the dream is more subtle and the waking state is, you know, more stula, more the physical world. But that's really not the point.
I know. My mind was still thinking, well, in a way it's the point for my mind, because my mind's going, well, I won't be certain about something until I know what exactly is the difference between how to understand the difference between the dream state as a phenomenological experience versus the waking state. And I was just wondering how that can be talked about.
Think about it. Well, we could talk about it in terms of Sattva-Rajas and Tamas and Maya. Do you want to talk about it that way? Oh, okay. All right. Then I'll do it real quick because we've been through it, right, and you'll see. If you say Maya is comprised of Sattva-Rajas and Tamas, nothing else, that's all. When the Maya projects, it initially projects that the first level of projection is what we call the 10 matras. Means space, air, fire, water, earth that have not gone through the process of grossification, right? And that which we call panchakarma. So then we've got Sattva, Rajas, and Tamas on a subtle level. That's for what we call Hiranyagarbha on the Samishti. It's all subtle. Nothing has gone, become grossified. And also for you, the Sukshma Sharira, the subtle body, the mind, right? And so your mind that indwells the physical body is subtle. It hasn't gone through a process of grossification. Okay? Then if we take the Sattva, Rajas, and Tamas that are the 10 matras that are subtle, remember the Sattva goes into making the mind and the sense organs, the Rajas goes into the vital force and the karma and the organs of action. The Tamas is on the subtle level, right? Because if you have an imagination, you still have Namarupa, name and form there. But to get this physical world, that tamas has to go through a process of grossification that we call panchakarma. And so now, when we're in the waking state, the subtle body is utilizing this physical body, which is made out of the elements that have gone through Panchakarana, in order to perceive this is the Panchakarana body and this is a Panchakarana world. Right? And so this body, the sense organs using this body and these physical sense organs perceives this world. That's what we call the waking state. Your sense organs are using the physical, five physical sense organs, in order to perceive the world. Now, in the dream state, this physical body is asleep, right? The said physical sense organs are asleep. The mind itself is active, right? The mind that's active is the sattva rajas, and the mind is sattva, right? And it has a predominantly sattva, and it'll have some rajas and tamas there because it mind moves and all of that. But it's predominantly sattva, right? And that's what is experienced in the dream. That's what we create a dream reality. Also, you don't have to have a dream to be in that reality. You can have an imagination, right? Because you're not, say you have an imagination or a daydream. At that time, you're not dependent upon your sense organs to give you that vritti, right? And so now, so that's the waking state, that's the dream. And in the deep sleep state, the whole maya is in unmanifest condition that we call avyaktam. So all of that is taking place in one adhara, one conscious being. So what has to happen here is that in all of those, in all of those states of experience, there's something in this anvaya vyatireka. When this is, that is. When this is not, that is not. The vyatireka fails. When this is, that is. When this is not, that still is. When that relationship is there, then you, the one that still remains when the other is gone, you know, is independent. That's the whole thing, is to recognize in your experience. We don't have to go into right now analyzing the reality or non-reality of matter. You know, just stick to the actual experience that you have. Like in the waking state, what is the experience that you have? You are the one that is there as the constant, you know, in the experiences you're having. You're always there. You're the center of your experiences. Okay, then you ask, well, what is about me is always there? Because there's an awful lot of things that are just coming and going. We don't notice that, you know. So what is the constant in the experience, in the waking state? And then the waking state goes, and I'm still there. Now it's a dream world. And there's nothing weird about that at all, because nothing happens to me. In the deep sleep state, too, I'm absolutely fine, even though there's not even any nourishment there. You know? So I have to recognize myself by letting go what goes. Yeah, you let go what goes. Because you don't. So that's the, so many of the prakriyas, you know, the methodologies are just to keep pointing, like the Drik Drisha and the Avastha Atvara Sakshi. Drik Drisha is the seer seeing differentiation, and then the differentiating yourself, the Sakshi, from the three states of experience. Those are important. And the other one is Kariya Karana, really, is the Satya Mithya. Understanding what is the cause, what is the effect? What's the relationship between the cause and the effect? Like, what is the relationship between me and the world that projects from me, say in the dream? It's the relationship between me, the self, and the world that projects. How am I its material cause? That's the Satya Mithya. That's a major prakriya that we have to sit with all the time. Mm. Mm.
Is that the same thing that you were talking about the other a couple of weeks ago about your experience with death? Nothing happened.
Yeah. What do you mean when I had that death experience in India? Yeah. That was amazing. Mm. A lot of things were happening. But it never occurred to me that I was dying. Never occurred. Didn't even cross my mind because there was no such experience. There's experiences going on for sure. You know, but not in, they don't touch you. And so you're not going to feel like you're dying because you don't feel any different. Nothing's happening to you.
Well, did you miss out when the body was collapsing and all that stuff? You know, the sense organ for...
You know, that was interesting because the sense organs were coming in and out and everything was falling apart. But you know, your body protects you. And all this terrible, I mean, very life-threatening stuff is happening, but... Mm. Somehow your psyche doesn't quite relate to it that way. When it's in a serious condition mm-hmm. like that, you're in kind of a different relationship.
Your psychology changes.
I think so, yeah. Also, you're so sick, you don't know. you can't stand or what.
Yeah. But that can be very different for different people. I mean, so do you think that...
Well, what won't be different for different people is the constancy of yourself. Mm. Whether even you can be just a... A total atheist, and you'll just be in for a surprise. It's like, oh, I guess I don't die.
And what if you got shot with a bullet, just like that, instantly?
Well, your body would instantly drop. You'd be instantly the body would be instantly dead, right? Mm-hmm. But nothing would happen to yourself. Just imagine yourself in a dream, and you're in a war, and you get shot, and you're killed instantly. You're in a dream, right? You're in a dream. That happens. You get shot. There's a war, and you get shot, and you're instantly killed.
Nobody.
Yeah, but what happens to you? Nothing. But the scene certainly changes. Right, because now you're not going to, your physical body is dead. So you're not going to be seeing anything to the physical body because it's dead, but the subtle body, or an Ajnani, the subtle body is still there.
Well, would you resolve into your own being, or would you...
You don't ever resolve into your own being because your own being is never not... There's nothing more to resolve into. It's already totally present as you.
So...
But if you're ignorant, then you'd start illumining something different.
Yourself doesn't change. The scenery changes. Like, say, if I go from this room into the next room, the scenery totally changes. If I get on the plane now and go back east, there's going to be a whole different change of scenery. You know, but the one, I have to differentiate the one who isn't changing. You know?
But it's kind of interesting now if you, for example, you have an intense dream and you wake up and suddenly there's some kind of crossover that happens because in the moment you wake up, yeah, that was the dream and you actually didn't really experience that in your body, but then there is a certain kind of rippling into the waking state where you suddenly kind of somehow assimilate the shock waves from the dream state. And so... How does that exactly work?
That's all subtle body coming back, awakening up to the physical body. But that's all still all within duality, all within Maya.
Uh-huh.
It's just subtle body, physical body.
Having
kind of a liminal state when mm-hmm. you're not quite awake, you're not quite connected with the physical body, and so there's like a rippling coming back into that level, that type of consciousness. But from the standpoint of the self, that's not involved in all of that.
Right, but do you think that your experience particularly, that you didn't get caught up in your mind, that you are dying, that this body is dying, also had maybe something to do with that you already had that certain knowledge?
No, I'll be right back. Mm-hmm. No, I was still in a gnawing big time.
So the scenery is going to change.
Yeah.
help.
I have just one little question, one little question further about that death scene. For Yanni, then there wouldn't be any more scenery change, right? It was just...
Oh.
What do you think of that?
For Jivanmukta, once there's no real ahankara that's, you know, that's causing you to want to travel on. Mm. That's not there anymore. Mm. And so for that person, there, the jiva is gone. Mm. Right? Mm. You know, because even now you have your body, mind, sense organs because the prarabdha is running out. But for you, you're the self. Even now, you're the self. And so when this body drops, the identity is with the self, not with the jiva. And so then what is the experience for you? Mm. Is Ishwara. Right? That's why I like to use the dream example, how you can go from having a body within the dream, you know, being a character within the dream, to just having the dream. You're not identified with anything in the dream, it's just the dream, right? And so that's Ishwara. So from this jiva that is creating experiences within the dream, that jiva is not there. And so what is there then? Ishwara, which is who you are. So think of it to kind of understand the smoothness of it all, which I like to think like this. When you have a dream, and say during the dream, during parts of the dream, you're a character in the dream. And when you're a character in the dream, I mean identified with the character in the dream, you're experiencing the dream through the eyes of the character. Right? And so you're experiencing, you're within it and looking around. You're totally contained. That's that Padimoa. You know, you're totally contained and experiencing from within it. Now, the dream goes on, and now, just for whatever reason, you're now not a character in the dream. That means now you are just experiencing the whole dream, not from, you're not experiencing it from within the dream. You're the Ishwara of the dream. Right? Now, when you go from being a jiva within the dream to being an Ishwara of the dream, is one more yourself than another? I would say absolutely not. It's just that because neither one is yourself is why. Is because the self of the whole is the self of the individual. The problem with being the individual, so you have no, in that mode, you're in the individual mode, is that if you have no knowledge, you know, then there's a total identification of the self with that individual, and that individual is bound by birth and death, and is, you know, subject to time, and is isolated. In other words, I'm not you. You know, and where's God? How do I fit into this whole thing? Because there's ignorance there. You know, and so that's a problem, you know, that the jiva has to contend with. It's a sorrow, it's a suffering, you know. that the jiva has to contend with. Whereas when you're just the whole, there, that isolation isn't there. You know, there's no limit. There's no limit. I am all that there is. So it's a different, you know, situation.
Yeah. Yeah, I was just going back, you know, to the Satvara, the Tamas model.
Yeah.
We say, and on a jiva level, we say, it seems to imply that the mind is more subtle, and then the glorification happens, and then there's the physical body, including the brain and all that. So it seems to imply that the mind in some way is more subtle and can exist without the body.
Remember that it transmigrates, right?
Right. However, we find like on a day-to-day level that our mind, which, you know, it has ahankara and buddhi and manas and all that. Well, the manas is very much actually the relationship in the real world is the opposite, that the emotions are dependent on the brain. Not that the brain is dependent on the emotion, right? Because that model will allow that the brain is dependent on the emotion. The brain is the rot. It's not rot, it's gross.
It's gross, yeah.
Than the manas. But, you know, when you take these, when you're depressed and you're given certain drugs or whatever, it's the processes of...
Yeah.
So it seems to have an opposite relationship in our...
Well, I think actually what they find is both are true. You can work with your mind to change the emotion from the standpoint of the mind, and you can also drug the brain.
Mm-hmm.
Right? You can go either from the physical to influence the subtle, or you can go from the subtle to influence the physical. But remember, when the subtle body takes this physical form, I mean, they're lock and key. It's not just it's kind of floating around there.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I mean, the body, the subtle body is totally integrated into this physical body.
So let's just take an extreme example. Supposing someone has a lobotomy, so a part of their brain is removed. So what happens to the manas?
Nothing. But the manas can't express in that brain. Right? It stays, it's exactly, no, what I mean is the sukshma sharira.
Right.
Right? So the sattva that goes into making the antakarana. The mind and the sense organs. That mind and sense organs are undamaged, but they're abiding in a damaged brain. And so they can't, think of, maybe this will help you, think of this jiva, the transmigrating jiva, which is the sukshma sharira, the subtle body, now takes an animal body. Now say it takes the body of a worm because of karma. The subtle body, you know, it has all of these qualities. I'm using a worm because a worm is still a living creature, and yet it's limited, has a limited capacity.
Yeah.
The same subtle body, but it's now stuck in a physical body that has limited capacity.
Mm-hmm.
And so once it's finished that karma, that and that worm body is dead, you know, then based upon its karma, the sukshma sharira will take another body, hopefully, you know, that has allowed for more full capacity.
It just doesn't seem that way, but it seems like it's the brain, so if the brain chemistry changes, then your emotions change. So it almost seems like the physical determines the subtle, not the other way around.
You could say the physical influences the subtle, but that's different than saying determines the subtle.
Mm-hmm.
You know, say the subtle mind is capable, you know, of all kinds of feelings and thoughts, and we have all of the chitta also, you know. But we give some sort of a drug to the brain,
mm-hmm.
right? And so then the chitta, or the antakarana, can only function in the brain, which is now drugged.
Mm-hmm.
Right, the brain is drugged. And so that antakarana now is going to be using and experiencing a drugged brain. So what I mean?
So is the antakarana a total, which, you know, so it has happiness and sadness, and it will just express one way or the other depending on the physicality it's associated with?
Not just the physicality, because you can also, you know, in in dream have emotions,
mm-hmm.
but you say you're embodied in this physical body. Say you're embodied in this physical body and it happens to be blind. What happens to the subtle eyes?
I don't know what the subtle eyes would be in that case.
They get stronger developed because they try to compensate.
Well, no, that's not what I mean, though. If we say, okay, subtle body, the subtle body is made of the sattva aspect of the five, just using the sattva, rajas, and tamas. It's made of the sattva aspect of the five subtle elements, okay? Of the five subtle elements, right?
Mm-hmm.
Those are the sense organs and the mind. It's the five subtle elements combined. That sattva plus the rajas that makes the vital force and the karmendriyas, that's what transmigrates, taking body after body after body. And so in that subtle body, there can be karmas accrued, you know, there can be some samskaras accrued and all of that. But they're going to manifest, because of the prarabdha, will manifest in taking a physical body, depending upon the karma. So when it takes a physical body, it's not like it takes it by the hand. You know, the subtle body takes that physical body, is totally, you know, embedded in that physical body until the body dies. I mean, I don't know what more to say about it. You're a scientist, and what you need to do is get some way of measuring the relationship between the subtle body and the physical body.
It's not even measuring the relationship, it's just the relationship seems opposite, you know, to what's
not. To me, it doesn't. Because, like, for instance, you're using a brain example, but say if you break your arm, the karmendriya is still there. But it can't work that arm because the arm is broken. If you look at a paraplegic, the sukshma sharira is still there, the body is broken. Nothing in the sense organs, the ears, the person, the sense of hearing is there, the ears are deaf. You know, eyes, all of them. Now think of the brain. The brain is, you know, damaged in one way or another or drugged. Then that chemistry, altered chemistry that you're doing to the brain is what's going to be experienced. Say if the brain is, they've done some studies on this called the kindling effect. You know, the chemistry of the body and the mind are very, very much related. Okay,
mm-hmm.
And so the body actually produces chemistry that can cause depression,
right?
Gets triggered. And the more it triggers, the more it triggers. So that becomes kind of a vicious
mm-hmm.
circle, right? Mm-hmm. So it's important, in fact, to try to break that process. So then what happens when that's going on is that the mind, right, is stuck with a brain that is producing, you know,
right.
depressed chemistry. You're stuck with it. And yet, your mind can also help to turn it around.
Yeah.
That's the opposite.
Yeah, that's the opposite.
Yeah.
Another thing where we look at this is the, you know, for pranayama, you know, breathing exercises, doing proper breathing, you'll bring the mind into a very quiet, very absorbed condition. So you can affect the state of the mind by the breath. But the state of the mind also affects the breath.
Yeah.
You know, like when you're relaxed, your breath is very gentle. When you're upset or angry, the breath is, you know. So we can use either way. You know, and in fact, it's very helpful to know that, oh, my mind's really upset, let me just breathe. let me do some pranayama. you know.
Have you really done that?
Yeah, I have done that. Yeah. I do that in meditation. That's why I do it in meditation, to try to give people a deeper sense of quiet. You know?
So that's a good little technique to put in your quiver.
Oh yeah, you can shift your autonomic nervous system.
Exactly.
Like
yeah.
The sympathetic and parasympathetic.
Yeah.
If you breathe slower, you know, you activate. Yeah.
That's right.
What about all that stuff you're supposed to be taking care of in the mind?
Well, giving it a break. We give you a moment of rest.
Mm. Mm.
But yeah, it's something to learn, just something to understand.
Carol, I want to follow up on my question. You know, where it's coming from is this interest in how the ahamkara moves into identification differently in these different... In the dream state, it seems like it goes into identification with the subliminal impressions in the mind. In the waking state, it goes into identification with whatever sense organs are perceiving. With self-knowledge, it goes into identification with the reflection of the self in the mind. It seems, I'm wondering about the line, what are the differences between the buddhi in the dream state, I mean, if the ahamkara is in the buddhi, and that goes into identification, it goes into identification in a certain way in the dream state, it goes into identification in a certain way in the waking state, what is that movement of the I in terms of its...
Okay, there's two things. Most important there is that in the dream state and in the waking state, the mind is still sattva. Right? It's the sattva. The mind is still the sattva aspect of the five elements. It's the sattva by its very nature reflects consciousness. Whether it's in the dream state or in the waking state, it still manifests consciousness. Okay. So that is the ahamkara there, because as long as there's ignorance and the mind is manifest as though manifesting consciousness or reflecting consciousness, that mind, because of the ignorance, says, "I am the conscious being." Right? That's where the, whether it says it or not. So also what we call chidabhasa, the reflection of consciousness that allows for that ahamkara, because the mind thinks, "I am the conscious being."
Mm-hmm.
But now when we use words like reflection of consciousness, that's a little problematic, because your self experience is not a reflection of consciousness. Your self experience is the Atma. It doesn't depend upon the sattva at all.
But there's a sense of knowership. I mean,
the knowership requires the sattva.
Okay, but the mind is a knower. Consciousness is not a knower.
We say the mind is a, we use this word, knower.
The mind reflects consciousness,
yeah.
And there's that experience of knowership that
yeah.
The mind enjoys.
It's actually a false experience. I mean, once you analyze it, that's not really what's happening, but that's how we talk.
Right.
Yeah.
So what's the... So there's three things that I see. There's the waking state, the dream state, and this isn't a state, but I'm wondering... Maybe I just need to...
Well, wait a minute. Let me do it for you. There's the waking state, the dream state, and the deep sleep state.
Yeah.
And what we call Turiya, the fourth.
Okay.
Turiya, the fourth, is the consciousness, which is the self of all three. And that consciousness is self-luminous, self-evident.
Mm-hmm.
But we call it the fourth because you do the waking, dream, deep sleep, Turiya, the state that's free of all those. So when you do the Satyam Mitya, the Satyam is free of the Mitya. Right, so in that way we call it the force, even though it's not really the force.
Mm-hmm.
Right, it's just because it's not a state, right.
Mm-hmm.
It's the very self of all of the three states. But that self needs to be differentiated.
But is there any state of knowership? Is there any sense of knowership in the fourth state? or is there only knowership when you come out of it?
Not quite like that. There's no subject-object knowership from the standpoint of the self.
Mm-hmm.
So, in that way. But the self is known,
mm-hmm.
right, by its very being. And so it's not like going into what we call jada, like an inert state. It's going into a state of absolute knowledge,
mm-hmm.
even though non-dual. Mm-hmm. But there's no, I would say, there's no knowership, nor is there any need for knowership.
There's no object knowledge.
There's no object knowledge, yeah. But there's pure knowledge. There's the essence of what knowledge is.
Mm-hmm.
That's the turiya. You know. Now, that turiya, the fourth state, while they talk about that with om, the om is a-u-m, so om, silence. Om, silence. Om, silence. Om, silence. Silence, om, silence, om, silence. The om is held in silence, right? Because actually the silence, the om is rising and setting in the silence. The silence is Brahman. And the om is the waking, dream, and deep sleep on both the Samishti and Vyashti level, total and individual level.
With self-knowledge, there's still that nitya experience, though, in the dream state of I am this. Say if I take a character, I am this character.
Yeah.
And I wake up, I am having, I mean, there's still that nitya relationship of the in terms of my experience.
There is, absolutely. As long as the sattva is there, as long as there's prarabdha that's going to take you through to your death, all of those experiences will be there. So if the sattva doesn't stop reflecting consciousness, the rajas that's responsible for the prana and all of that doesn't stop functioning. Everything keeps going as long as you've got the upadhi. It's just that you've differentiated and you know satya and mitya. You know what's what.
You do, but so unless you're in a state of samadhi, there's always going to be that nitya experience of some kind of relationship to my perceptions.
There will be, but there will also always be the pure the asanga, the pure untouched being of yourself, which isn't being covered at all. Even though this mitya continues to happen.
Right, but there'll never be an absence of that.
In nirvikalpa samadhi.
Maya relationship, unless you're in nirvikalpa samadhi.
Yeah, because it's here, but it doesn't mean anything. I mean, it doesn't cover you. It's Ishvara.
Yeah, I get that. I think this is all just coming from, so like the mind wants to know, though, what is the nature of this movement of I, even if it is nitya, what's going on? You know, and that's where it's coming from for me. Like, what is going on in the dream, and then what is going on in the waking state? It's like that I sense that directionally it goes, it starts, I don't want to say something that's...
But I don't know, maybe there's, I don't know if it's the same thing you're talking about, but this abhimanya is what it's called.
The sense of I.
Yeah, but the as though identity with the body.
Yeah. There's an as though there. The as though is there because the body, mind, and sense circuits are all here.
Right.
Right, and they all reflect consciousness, and so there's a sense, they have a sense of conscious being. But you've differentiated yourself from the mitya.
Right.
Right, so both are there at the same time.
Right.
I have a question, although sort of a practical nature. So in your meditation, you experience as the mind becomes subtler, as you enter into a more meditative or deeper meditative state, do you experience a shift from subject-object type self-awareness to something different?
Yeah, but you can experience that right now. You don't have to be in a meditative state for it.
Well, yeah, but I guess I'm talking about it in terms of meditation because it's more well-defined for me.
Yeah.
I can have lots of different experiences with my eyes open, but when I meditate, it's a source of interest to me. What arises as the mind becomes more subtle. And I've had different kinds of experiences at the point where the subject-object type of self-awareness either intensifies to a kind of clarity of awareness of every moment with no gap, and then also I have an experience that sometimes in my meditation the subject-object type of awareness dissolves and something's going on, but what it is, like, I'm not aware of it with my waking state consciousness. So I feel like from the waking state, if I'm having a good meditation, I often kind of enter more of a dream state, which I notice because the thoughts are more fragmentary. They persist for a moment and then they're gone. Then they're. But I don't retain the subject-object type awareness. So I just am always interested.
The subject-object does drop off because as the mind becomes more quiet. You know, there's no, that type of activity isn't there. That subject-object is all Maya. That belongs, you need the mind active there. So as the mind becomes more resolved and more quiet, there's just the abiding of your own being. It has nothing to do with subject-object.
So in your experience, in your meditation, do you retain a kind of awareness at the place where subject-object is still evolving, a different kind of awareness that is a persistent?
Yeah, but what I would say even a little bit more... And that is that initially, until yourself is really differentiated, you can rely upon resolving your mind so you can become aware of the self, which is free of subject-object. But in the end, you recognize the self that is free of subject-object all the time, even when subject-object is there.
Well, I understand what you're saying about that I could do that at any time, I think.
Yes.
And I have different kinds of experiences that I go in and out of, you know, in an ordinary day.
But one thing, one difference that I don't know if I'm making it clear or not is that the mind goes in and out of lots of different experiences.
Right.
Some more subtle, some gross,
very nuanced,
all kinds of different things, you know. But amidst all of those different things, both subtle and gross, is a self that's free of subject-object.
Well, I don't think I've had that experience. I can understand that in terms of theory. I don't think I've had that experience.
I actually think you have that experience all the time. But you have to recognize it, that's all. Because the self isn't an experience that comes and goes. Right? It's different than the mental experiences that you have. So you just have to recognize it.
Well, I don't think I recognize that yet.
Yeah, that could be. Yeah, but you will.
Isn't that at every moment when we don't identify? It's like, isn't that kind of like the default, so to speak? Like if I don't identify with I'm doing this, or you saying this to me, or any identification, but if I'm actually just experiencing a sense of beingness, isn't that kind of the default of
of what we're really talking about.
Yeah, but the thing is,
it's like the screen, and then there's a projection on the screen, but the screen is always there.
It's always there. And so what about when your mind has had enough opportunity to recognize the screen versus the images?
That's right.
You know, and then that becomes natural because you've had enough time to have do that differentiation. You know, and so you just are that. You always are that, and all this other stuff is happening too. Sometimes, you know, very, very busy, sometimes agitated, sometimes quiet, sometimes beautifully absorbed, all kinds of differentiated mental states are going on. And you can be very engaged in the world too. But no matter how much the engagement, you are still there.
Well, the reason, if I may,
yeah.
I consider it an interactive discussion, so I'm glad you added in your piece. The reason I say that is because the great beings that I've been around, who, in my guesstimation, I don't really know, they've attained that kind of consciousness to a very high degree, very associated in it, as I'm sure as long as you can. They have access to, I'm going to use the word Shakti, they have access to powers and knowledges and states of mind and being that just literally boggle my mind.
Yeah, but that's all, again, those are states. Those are very subtle mental states.
They are?
Oh, yeah. They're cities. They're different cities.
They're cities.
Yeah, that's right. But that's not.
I mean, I don't really know, but I think you're right. Yeah, they show up that way.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and but that's not the self.
Right.
The self is present to that.
Mm-hmm. But I guess I'm saying that it has seemed to me that the people who have a lot of those powers. Who are not displaying those powers, but they just seem to have mm-hmm. them, and they downplay. So I don't feel that I have recognized anything like something that would cause me to have that experience.
Well, what you're saying is that, well, let me put it this way, a yogi,
mm-hmm.
you know, who
mm-hmm.
doesn't have self-knowledge
mm-hmm.
can have all of those.
Right.
Right.
And mechanical kind of mind quality.
Yeah. And not just mechanical, but there's also values and to bring about mm-hmm. a certain antikarma shuddhi, a certain purity of mind, and mm-hmm. then certain mm-hmm. practices.
Mm-hmm. Right.
And certain saintliness.
Right.
You know, but that doesn't have anything to do, again, with self-knowledge.
Mm-hmm.
Now, when you gain self-knowledge, you know, your mind and body do become, you know, quiet.
Mm-hmm.
And so it's, you may or may not have different capacities.
Okay.
Yeah. But that doesn't have anything to do with recognizing yourself, with knowing yourself.
So you think
yourself
it's just other
karmas? Yourself is in a siddhi.
It's just other karmas that don't necessarily have to do with self-realization.
That's right. And they need not all, it's not that a jnani ends up having all of these siddhis. A lot of the siddhis you have to really work for.
Mm-hmm.
You have to want that siddhi. And then,
mm-hmm.
you know, like say you want to be a pianist.
Mm-hmm.
You have to work for that.
Right.
You know, or a tennis player, you know, musician, anything. You have to put in your time to develop that capacity.
Well, I had one teacher who used to say, I was her judgest one, and then she used to call me Mr. Judge, so maybe those won't be my karmas. Because you're talking about judge.
Yeah, you know, they also say that
jokingly,
if you were a yogi, say, in your last life, an accomplished yogi in your last life, and in this life you get self-knowledge, you may have some scars.
Mm-hmm.
You know, because I don't really think a jnani is going to spend all their time working on developing these siddhis.
Right.
Unless it's part of your prarabdha, you can't really say.
Right.
You
Exactly, and then it makes sense.
Yeah, because it's who you are, it's what you're doing in this life. You get knowledge along the way. In fact, in the Gita now, where we are at the Gita, they're talking about that in the next couple of verses. The yogi who gains knowledge.
Well, the reason I just asked all that was because I have an interest in my meditation. I feel like my meditation is, I don't know that it's true, but it seems quite possible that that's the first place, that the easiest place to touch the, you know, when the clutter is down.
Absolutely. That's why it's so powerful. Meditation is great.
And, but I feel like I'm not reaching the depths of awareness in my meditation that I'd like to.
I mean, you're not getting the resolution of the mind that you'd like to get.
Yeah, maybe that would be a way to say it. Mm-hmm. There isn't...
You know, part of that is because there's a lot of unconscious stuff, and when you meditate, mm-hmm. part of the meditative practice has to take care of the unconscious, mm-hmm. so that it can also relax.
Mm-hmm.
And if you don't know how to do that first, I don't know if you do or not, but if you don't know the techniques for doing that, then you relax the conscious mind and make it very quiet,
mm-hmm.
but the unconscious is agitated.
So there are techniques for calming the unconscious mind, is it?
Yeah, that can be helpful.
Okay.
Well, so like the inner friend.
Yeah.
Yeah, like the inner friend, like in a child type of work. It's just a sequence. I can't do it right now because I'm just tired.
Mm-hmm. See, what you were saying reminded me a little bit of these pictures. You know, you look at them and your eyes are just seeing like one thing, you know, and then so suddenly you have this shift in perception.
Yeah.
And suddenly, it's like the screen behind it becomes a whole new picture.
Yeah.
It's just the black and white, it's just basically two shapes coming together, but your conscious awareness fixates on the black, but then if you suddenly look at the white behind it, suddenly you see a totally different picture.
Yeah, like and the, it's the kind of and the profiles.
Yeah, it kind of... Well, even simpler, you know, even just like two pictures, just black and white, two shapes projected on each other. No magic. It's just your focus is really on one thing, mm-hmm. but the other one is always there.
Yeah.
And it kind of feels like that with how you're just describing the satyam versus the nitya, you know? So there's this focus on nitya, but then suddenly the satyam is always there. Yeah. It's just like...
That is kind of like that.
And then you can learn to dance back and forth also. You know, and they kind of start to get more, there's a fluidity that happens between two, both of them, because you kind of relax more, your vision or something.
Except remember that the satyam isn't coming and going.
Right.
You know?
Yeah, yeah, that's true. That's another level of, can put this in there, you know.
But I appreciate the play.
Yeah.
Yeah, yeah. I thought of that too.
Uh-huh.
Yeah. All right, we're done.